Hi, everybody. How are you today? This is Mark Ciafardini. Thanks so much for coming back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. Oh, man, don't you just love it when you wake up and you feel invigorated about the day, like you could take on anything, you can swim across the shores, fly to Mars, hit home runs without even trying? Well, if those are the things that you like to see and do and experience, then we have a fantastic show for you. We are about to speak to Amelia Warner, a composer of absolute brilliance. I can't even contain myself in my words. She is the composer to Young Woman in the Sea, Joachim Rønning's true life story of Trudy Ederle, the woman who swam the English Channel. First woman, she's still talked about today. She made such great waves, as does Miss Warner's music. So we are thrilled to have her on the show today. Amelia, how are things in your world?
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. Things are good. Things are really good. We had the premiere of the film last night. So it was just really lovely to see it with an audience and to kind of get people's reactions, because it's been, you know, a while coming out. So it was really lovely to all come together. And it's always just, you know, it's such a weird thing about being the composer, is you feel so intimate with the cast because you kind of know every, you know, bit of their face and their, you know, and but you don't get to meet them. So I kind of got to meet so many of them last night for the first time, even though I felt like I'd known them for years. So it was just, it's always such a lovely thing when you actually get to say hello to the people you've been working with, but kind of on your own for such a long time.
I mean, how has your year been? I mean, it sounds like you've been working on this a while. Mother's Day was last month. How's the ebb and flow, in nautical terms, been for you this year?
It's been good. I mean, it's actually been pretty quiet, which has been lovely. I was on Young Woman in the Sea for quite a long time, and it was a lot of work, and it was an incredible experience. And then we had the strike last year, and then actually, yeah, it's been quiet. But like I say, it's welcome, and I'm enjoying the quiet and enjoying, you know, just the kind of the peace at the moment.
Well, yeah, take it when you can get it, because I can imagine when it's feast or famine, the feast is probably brain cell killing, hair pulling, inducing, just madness to get it done.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, all of those things.
Well, I first became aware of Joachim's work with Kon-Tiki, a fantastic, similarly themed story on the seas about people triumphing and trying to pursue their, their pursuits, and some might even say destiny. And he's also done Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales. So I think he's got a knack for the aquatics. How did you first get involved, and what made you want to say yes to this?
I was sent the script, and, you know, as soon as I read it, it was, you know, a full body yes. But I then had to kind of convince everyone, you know, everyone involved that I was the right person. So I had, you know, a meeting with the writer and with Jerry and with Joachim, and, yeah, and luckily they gave me the job and gave me the chance and the opportunity. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, in terms of a project for me, it was my absolute dream project for a number of reasons. So yeah, it was so thrilling to be able to actually do the job.
All right. Well, what were some of those reasons? Maybe can you give me two?
I think the fact that it was a true story, the fact that this woman was so extraordinary, and the fact that I hadn't heard of her before, I just felt like she deserved her story to be told in the most extraordinary way. And so she was really inspiring. I think having three daughters, I want more of these kind of stories out in the world, and to be part of telling that story just felt like such an incredible privilege and an honor. And then also to work with, you know, to work with Joachim and also to work with Jerry Bruckheimer. I mean, he is just such a legend, and you know, I am such a fan of his films and of his scores in particular. And he, you know, he's very, I think that, you know, he's very knowledgeable and brilliant with music. So I think working with him was just, you know, a real bucket list for me.
Yeah, that would make me throw my hands up, and I can't even compose. I just do whatever it takes to get close to the project.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you
and
mentioned
the script was so sorry. That just also the script was just so brilliant, and you know, it was one of those screenplays that you just think, "Oh my God, this is so special," and they don't come along very often.
I always go into something that's based on a true story because I would say that many times, much like a Bond movie, you kind of know that there are going to be stakes, but you know that they wouldn't tell a terrible story if it ended terribly. So I think that, you know, the reason that these movies exist is to, even though you might understand where it's going, it's still the journey, which, you know, I guess to a swimmer, the journey is everything. But I got some incredible Apollo 13 vibes, and just that level of, you know, there's uncertainty in the way the music really catapults the heart swells and the emotions. I mean, it's just, I don't think that there could have been a better score for this film. So I'm going to give you a round of applause, or maybe a square. I can like bounce across the screen.
Oh, thank
lavish
you.
Praise,
thank
lavish
you.
Praise.
That's a really wonderful and very kind of you to say and to hear. And, you know, I felt you know, a great deal of pressure, because I do think with this kind of film, like you say, the music is so important, and I knew that it was going to be such an important factor in the story, and I'm so pleased that it worked for you.
Well, I think it worked for two reasons, because it's not just personal drive, personal ambition, just persevering, but it's also the support. And I think you know, for anything to truly succeed, it needs both interior momentum and exterior catalyst. That's something that helps get you moving. And so I think that I just want to maybe jump to a couple cues and pick your brain. I in my mind, if I was to score this, I would think that something like Sisters and The Race would have to be the cues that you absolutely have to get right. And then everything else kind of, not to say falls into place and becomes easy, but I think that that's most of the heavy lifting. What was your experience?
No, that's really spot on, actually, and that's exactly how it kind of played out. And I think that, you know, in the early conversations and when I first came onto the project, we were all in agreement that this was, you know, this was a movie that needed a real theme, like a proper old-fashioned movie theme. And we needed that Trudy theme, that kind of hero theme. And, it, you know, once we had that, it took a while. But once we got that theme, we all were a bit like, okay, well, we're kind of done. But then what became really apparent was, no, that's not going to be enough, actually, because that's her, and that's her emotional theme, and that's her family and her sister and her connection to her roots. And like you say, that's her kind of interior world. But we also really needed the exterior and the swimming and the racing, the propulsion, the excitement, and the sport element of it. And that was something that Jerry was really adamant about when he came on. You know, when the first time I sat down with him, he was like, this is a sports movie and she needs a sports theme. And so I think once I started working on that and kind of came up with The Race, then it all started to make more sense, because you really needed both. You know, it wasn't it, because there are really long swimming sequences and montages, and you need something to carry you through those and to keep the film moving forward and to make those exciting and also just hark back to, you know, to kind of great sports movies. So I mean, I'd say that was almost harder, was getting that sport kind of theme. But it was a great, you know, once we had it, everything kind of clicked. And then that, you know, there were lots of other important themes as well that came later. But I think that those were the skeleton or the framework, certainly, of the score.
That's excellent. And, you know, I work in architecture, so I can kind of relate to, you know, once you get a couple elements of your palate correctly. Again, it's not that it becomes easier, it becomes intuitive, but there's it definitely helps you see the next step. Because I think that it's very easy to procrastinate when you don't know what you're doing, and there's nothing scarier than a blank canvas. But as long as you start, take that first stroke, take that first keynote, that you're essentially taking a step forward. So excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard at the beginning when you've got so much, so many choices to make, you know, it's really, really hard. And then I think once you start honing in on something and actually, it becomes easier, and then you start to have your palette and your colors, and then you just can build from there.
You know, the funny thing about swimming is, and not to say it's a funny sport, but I think that it's hard to grasp what it takes and what it's all about if you're not actually the one doing it. I mean, you know, swimming the American forward crawl is not as elegant as, say, a hook shot or a home run or something like that. But there's still, you know, there's still, I guess you could say it's like running. But, you know, if you're just watching somebody go back and forth, you know, 400 laps, and then you hear something like your theme for the race, it helps you get invested, almost as invested as the person in the water. So I think that the marriage of visuals and audio, just I'm going to continue to sing your praises throughout this, but it's like, it just really spoke to me. And I was really glad to watch it with headphones. I think that's really important, because it really put it in my cerebrum, and now it lives rent free forever.
And I think that the mix is incredible. I got to sneak in and watch some of it last night, and, you know, seeing it in the cinema, and actually feeling it. I mean, the bass and the noise of the ocean and of the music, I feel like there was such a generous mix. And it was, when the music's big, it's really big, and it really has those moments where it's kind of telling the story. But then also just the sound generally, I think is really visceral and powerful.
Well, yeah, I think one of the elements that I was keen to and really drawn to was the choir. And if I'm not mistaken, it was an all-female choir. Am I getting that right?
Yes. I'm actually just thinking, was it? Hang on a minute. Yes. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Sorry. It was both. It was both. But had a lot of solo, quite a lot of solo soprano stuff in there.
Okay.
But we did have a choir. Yes, okay. Men and women.
I must have a little too much water in my ear. Maybe I couldn't discern it, but I was thinking that maybe, you know, a lot of people like to get very granular with it, you know, maybe tie too closely to the narrative. And I just wondered if maybe because it was Trudy's story, and was it all women? But well, I guess that question went out the window.
Maybe it should have been.
No, I think it was perfect.
It was predominantly women, but we just, you know, you need a bit of the full range.
Sure. But speaking to your experiences catching in at the cinema, I mean, what was that like in the session? I mean, I can only imagine how great it feels through the headphones, or now that I'm listening to the score on repeat. I mean, are there words to describe how that felt seeing it put together?
No, not really. I mean, it was just really overwhelming. And I've not had a recording on that scale before. So, I mean, the thing is, you are always just, you can't fully just sit back and enjoy it, because there's always a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that can go wrong. And there are still a lot of things at stake, even at that very last point when you're recording. And so it wasn't, you know, there was stress, let's say, but at the same time, there were definitely moments within that of just kind of pinching myself and enjoying what the musicians were doing and hearing it, you know, because as much as you know it's going to sound better, and as much as you're saying to the filmmakers, yes, but when we record this, oh my gosh, it's going to sound, you know, a million times better. You know it, but then when you hear it every single time, it does shock me how elevated it is and how much more emotional and expressive. And, you know, you get so used to hearing things with the demos and the samples that you just almost accept them. And then you forget that there's this whole other magical process at the end. So, yeah, it was very enjoyable and special.
Well, speaking of that magic, what were some of the biggest surprises that you were happy to see come together, like you mentioned?
Or in the score generally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the size of the score was a surprise, definitely to me. I think to everyone, actually. You know, I think when I came on board, we were talking about something much smaller and something, you know, like a much smaller score. And it just kind of grew and grew and grew. And it, just in the kind of production of it and the scale of it. And I think also, you know, initially I was imagining something that would fit in the 1920s, that would be in that kind of period. And again, that, you know, we ended up with something so far from that, something much more contemporary. And I think one of the most surprising things that happened was early on, I was, you know, I was writing ideas and I was writing themes. And I think, you know, the references that I'd been talking about with the director were really beautiful scores. And I think, you know, the early footage I was seeing was so beautiful. And I suppose I was writing, trying to write this like very beautiful score. And then, you know, when I met Jerry and when he came to the edit, it was like, he just kind of, I realized that I was almost kind of conditioned to, it was like my own conditioning that like, well, we've got this beautiful woman and she's swimming the sea and it has to be beautiful. And he was just like, this is a sports movie and she's an athlete. And, you know, you need to write a theme for an athlete. And I think it was really, it was one of those moments where you just go, oh my God, like, you're so right. Like, it doesn't need to be beautiful. It needs to be strong and bold and bombastic. And it was like a bit of a wake up for me of just my own, you know, and I did just, and then I started to just think, well, what would I do if this was man swimming the channel? What would the music be? And challenge myself in that way, because yeah, I think it was easy to just kind of go down this like ethereal, watery kind of score, and actually that wouldn't have been serving Trudy. She needed something to, you know, to convey like her strength and her athleticism. So that was, I guess, the biggest surprise for me was like my own I don't know, kind of, yeah, conditioning and going, oh my God, I didn't even realize I was doing that. But it was good to kind of be, I suppose, called out in a way. It, not that he did, but do you know what I mean? It was just like, I just felt, yeah, I was surprised that I was even doing that.
Well, I imagine that's probably like a light bulb. I mean, one of the things about a lot of composers is they do work in silos, even though they're given, you know, directives or having spotting sessions or getting notes, it's still kind of insular. And so just to get another idea that changes your perspective can just, you know, take you in a completely different direction. That's.
Yeah, totally. And it just gave me permission to be really bold. And that was so liberating. And I think once I started writing in that way, it just became, because I think I'm used to not wanting to get in the way and the music having to be very restrained. And actually this was a real opportunity where, you know, Jerry wanted the music to be there. He wanted it to make an impact and to tell the story and to hit, and to kind of be given that space and that scope was just, it was so exciting. And yeah, like I say, and the permission to just go for it.
Well, I want to say the thing that surprised me is actually just what you said about the modernity, because I had a really strong feeling that this felt wasn't classical exactly, but it felt timeless, and it didn't have too many bits of modernity. Maybe the drums got heavy, the cellos felt kind of modern, and then there's a part, you know, the wolf sequences, the sabotages, they felt kind of otherworldly and maybe bits and pieces there, but hearing what you say about all the other elements and how it felt, that surprised me.
Yeah, and I think that, again, you know, it was at the beginning, I was very much using a traditional kind of orchestra, and then I, you know, added some other elements and drums being really important, and that became a really, really big important part of the score, the percussion, and then electric cello, and it was just kind of going, oh wow, this really works, like this is really working, this is really telling the story. And I think that again, that just gave me so much more freedom to just make the race as exciting as I could, to kind of make that final swim as epic as possible without having to think at all about period, you know, what would have been true to the period. I think it really opened it up for me.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that really just helped make a better connection to the emotions, because if you did limit your palate and were so tied to, you know, maybe ragtime or whatever it was back in the 20s, it might've just been a little lacking something, but.
And I think we were also, the thing that I kept coming back to a lot was just thinking about, you know, not wanting to kind of fall into the biopic TV special, you know, how do you elevate it? How do you differentiate? How do you make it cinematic? You know, and I think it looked so cinematic and was so visually exciting. So it was just like, I had to match it, you know, and I felt like that just needed some more contemporary elements.
And I couldn't believe how fabricated this entire production was. I mean, you could tell everything was a set, but not sound stagey. But what I mean is, they didn't find these places. They crafted the basement where the swimming pool was, the hotel on the shore, Trudy's apartment, all these things. I mean, it felt like it was so curated and bespoke that it probably helped create this world. So I was blown away by the visuals as well.
Yeah, it is beautiful and stunning, and again, it feels old fashioned in a lovely way. It feels like going back to films where they built the set and they built every, you know, every prop, everything on there, and it kind of felt like a return to that.
Absolutely. Did you get to visit the stages? Did you, you know, get behind the curtain, so to speak?
Anywhere? No, I didn't. I didn't, sadly. I would have loved to. I think they maybe had already started shooting when I came on board. And yeah, I didn't get the chance to go.
I forget the article, the interview of Akira Kurosawa, and somebody was asking him how and why he chose the aspect ratio and the framing for Ran, one of his last films. And he said something to the effect of, if I was a quarter of an inch this way, you would have seen an airport. And if I was quarter of an inch this way, you would have seen something. But it's, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like the idea you can control what you can control. And then with that focus, you can, you know, literally teleport people to magical places. So.
Wow. Yeah. No, I love that. Love that.
Well, you mentioned your daughters earlier. Do they understand what you do? Do they get to kind of see what mommy's workshop looks like?
I mean, I think they do. I mean, it'll be interesting. I'm going to take them to see it on Saturday, and that will be the first time of them actually being able to go to a cinema and see something that I've done. So I wonder if that will kind of connect it for them. They obviously saw when I was working on it, they saw bits and pieces. I told them about it and they were kind of interested. But at the same time, like last night, I had to go to the premiere and I was like, I've got to go. And my youngest just said, tell them you're sick, cancel it. You know, so there's always.
That's the way she talks. She sounds so regal, so stern.
No. Tell them you're sick. So I was just like, so, you know, they're never, you know what it's like, kids, they never really want you to do anything apart from be with them. So I don't think they're quite there yet. They just want me here. But I think they'll be, maybe when they actually get to see it, that will be really lovely.
Okay. Do you think they'll be able to spot your name quick enough in the credits as it's crawling?
Yeah, probably not. I'll try and point it out. I'm trying to remember where it comes. It's at the end, isn't it? On the big swim. Yeah.
Actually, I did pick up on that. I asked a composer a number of years ago. I said, do you get to work with the editing such that maybe the emphasis of the score really hits when your name shows up on the screen? He goes, nah. But
no,
I was like, oh, well, you dashed that fantasy. But I did notice that as the credits are happening, you know, and they're showing the individual names, there's sort of the camera's swimming, or not swimming, the camera's sweeping, and it's just like when the sun hits the water and it becomes absolutely sort of 12 o'clock-ish, that kind of like, I think that's the part that hits your name. And I was like, that's got to be magic. That's got to feel good.
Yeah, you know what? I did actually score the credit. So that music was written for that. I mean, it changed a number of times. And my, you know, name was there. And it really did just happen to be a point where the music changes a little bit. And I was like, oh God, I don't want it to look like I've manipulated this so that it's changing chord on my name. But it actually did end up doing that. But it really wasn't deliberate. And I had nothing to do with the sun hitting the water.
Well, you know what? Take the perks when you can get them. And if nobody, you know, Easter eggs. That's what creatives love to do, is plant little Easter eggs. So whatever.
That's true.
Well, I want to say one of the most compelling parts of the film are the jellyfish and then being lost in the shallows. And I think just the two of them thinking about how, I mean, you know, there's plenty of people in the world who have never learned how to swim. And this woman is swimming for 14 hours straight through jellyfish with no lights, no point of reference. I wonder, is there a parallel? Do you have common experiences of how you've pulled yourself through jellyfish, or what you use as a beacon to sort of help pull you through any creative hurdles or nebulous times?
Well, do you know what? Weirdly, that this actually happened after the film, so I can't say that it was, you know, I drew on it from my experience, but I have a huge scar, and we're not on camera, but on my arm, and it's a massive jellyfish scar. So I got stung by a jellyfish last summer, just after I finished the film, and it has left this huge jellyfish shaped scar on my forearm. And it was so painful. And I was actually talking to my mum last night, because she was at the screening, and she was just like, do you think maybe it was just like leaving its mark as like, you know, this experience of like scoring this film? And I hadn't kind of thought of that, but now I'm kind of looking at it going, oh my God, maybe that is like my young woman in the sea unintentional tattoo. So I feel like when I watch that jellyfish sequence now, I do, it hits slightly differently. But no, I mean, I'm a swimmer, and I do lots of swimming and cold water swimming. I swim all year round, and I, you know, it's a big thing for me, and I love it. And when I came onto the project, I kind of thought, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to have this thing to draw upon, and, you know, being in the cold water and breaking the ice and kind of being resilient. But to be honest, I don't know that it really did inform anything that I did or any choices that I made musically. I couldn't really find a way of conveying it. I mean, I think for me, like, being in the cold and swimming is all about quiet and peace, whereas that, you know, that wasn't that helpful for writing a score. So I didn't have any personal experience really that I could draw upon in terms of being, you know, that kind of endurance or that kind of resilience. It was much more about just responding to what I was seeing on screen and seeing what, you know, Daisy was portraying, and just, I mean, like the Lost in the Shallows section is just so sad. I mean, I still, you know, I've watched it so many times, and I still can't bear watching that bit when you see her on her own in the water, and you know, it's just, it's awful. So it was more responding to everything that I was seeing. And the jellyfish was brutal again, you know, to watch and to imagine. I mean, really hard to watch. So, but yeah, it was really just, the jellyfish was a tricky one, because it was trying to show her as heroic and, you know, using her theme, but also wanting to portray the pain and how brutal it was, you know. And so kind of trying to find that middle ground, but, was hard. That was actually quite a hard sequence to get right, and it definitely had a few different incarnations. But the bit where she's lost in the shallows, I mean, that whole section I just love that bit of the film, you know, from when she's lost to when the bonfires are being lit. And I mean, that is such a big, long sequence, and it just grows and grows and grows and grows to this kind of crescendo. And I think, you know, it was just keeping that momentum and having enough space to keep building was the trick, I guess, with that. And but yeah, I love that section of the film.
Yeah, I definitely got some emotional Apollo 13 and even Rudy vibes from it. And I mean, I could just imagine those people like lighting those bonfires instead of Rudy. Mm. It was like Trudy. It's just, I don't know if you can quantify the amount of sports movies that do that right, but there's very few of them that actually put such an emphasis on the people who like get involved. And it's just, it was a reflection of how she inspired people, you know, to get out and help her. And I was like, I'm going to tear up now just thinking about it. And I'm not even listening to your music. So it's powerful.
I know. It's so powerful. And like I say, you know, you watch, when you're composing something, you're watching it like, you know, 50 times a day sometimes. And I still, when I watched it last night in the cinema, I was still, when she's there and you see the lights behind her, just going, turn around, Trudy, please turn around, please turn around, you know, like willing her to turn around. It still gets me.
Amazing. and I love that there are, you know, maybe 10 years ago, you wouldn't have expected to see a movie about someone swimming in the shallows, or, well, maybe I take that back. Joachim Roening did Kon-Tiki about people persevering. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll strike that comment from the session. But it's just, you know, in a world of sequels and remakes and reboots and stuff, just to get something like this is not just a fresh breath air, but I feel that people need these movies, because it's not just helping people pass some time and be entertained. It shines a light on people who have, you know, done amazing things. And, you know, in one way, they need their recognition. And then two, it just shows you the power of people. So not really a question.
Yeah. No, but 100%. And you're right. And I think it's, you know, it was so quick to do sequels and familiar stories. And then you just think there are these treasures, you know, these undiscovered treasures of real people and real things that happen that, you know, are just waiting for their stories to be told. And I think with Trudy, like, you know, I'd never heard of her. I'd never been taught about her in school. It wasn't a name that was on any kind of list of inspirational women. And, you know, I felt really ashamed in a way that I didn't know about her. And I think a lot of people felt the same. So I think that is what can be so powerful and beautiful about cinema and filmmaking, is to like bring these people to life and to our attention, and not kind of let them be forgotten and lost in time. And I think it is just so wonderful when you have something that's like an original feel, you know, an original idea, and is but when it comes from a true story. And like, she absolutely deserves to be a household name for her achievements and how she changed the landscape for women in sport. And she just was an extraordinary woman. So it is really special. And I think, you know, Disney and Jerry have such a legacy of telling those kinds of stories, you know? So I think they were the perfect people to bring it to the screen.
Well, it certainly made me happy as both a film score fan, a film fan, and just general, you know, I have three, not say mandates, but when I go into any movie, I want to feel surprised, entertained, and delighted. And I would say that this did all of that and then some. So,
so great.
Fantastic. But more of that note, so your work made me happy, but please tell us, we're going to try to, as we're tailing off the interview, we go into some fun questions, but we're trying something new. I was wondering if you'd be game for it. Can you tell me, what are Amelia Warner's 10 favorite things? Things that make you happy, things that bring you delight, things that are keepsakes or, you know, dogs or whatever makes you happy. You want to try something like that?
Okay, I'll just fire off some things as they come to me. What makes me happy? Well, cold water swimming makes me really happy. Climbing and like hiking makes me really happy. Being outside, playing cards makes me really happy. What else? Like afternoon tea that we have in the UK. So, you know, like cake and tea and scones and all of that stuff. Reading makes me very, very happy. An open fire makes me happy. The ocean, the sea makes me really feel very, very happy when I'm near water. How many is that? Are you counting? I'm not
I got
counting.
eight.
Eight. Okay. What else makes me happy? Well, my family. And oh my God, it's so hard. I mean, there's a lot of things. What else makes me really happy? Probably, well, yeah, I'm gonna say my dog as well, Leonard. He's great. I mean, obviously, like kids and husband, that all goes without saying. That's not, you know, that's, you know, a given.
Yeah, you generalize family and it becomes, you know, it includes everybody, but that's great.
Okay, good.
Reading, fires, climbing, swimming, the water, tea, all that is fantastic. You did very well. This is going to be a long-standing series on the podcast moving forward. Thanks for kicking it off with us.
Oh, good.
Well, I
Music
tell
too,
you
I should
what.
probably say.
What was that?
Music as well, I should probably say. Music makes me very happy.
Well, it doesn't have to. There's a movie. I don't know if you remember Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's what really catapulted him into become a household name. But there's a small part in it where somebody dies. I think somebody was probably eaten by a zombie, and they had to put him down. Very dour, very horror type stuff. But there's a part where
Yeah.
They're sitting around and they say, you know, somebody should say something. And they turn to the guy, I believe his name was Glenn, told them that he played organ at a church. And he goes, "You worked at a church, you know, you must have heard something." And his response was, "It was just a job." So,
Yeah.
in a way, you know, you don't have to love what you do as much as the things that make you happy. So it's you know, this world's about
True.
you finding little bits of, you know, I call them pearls that you string together and create like opportunities for happiness. So it's just it's like kind of a derivation of stop and smell the roses I'm trying to adopt. And
Love it. It's good.
well, Amelia, I will let you get to your family. You've given us plenty to go off of, but I just want to again sing your praises, using and paraphrasing my favorite fictional Canadian hockey player, and say that you are smart, capable, dependable, rational, outgoing, kind, consistent. You are a leader. Thank you so very
Oh my
much for your
God.
time.
Thank you. And thank you for your amazing support and generous words. It means a lot. So thank you.
All right. Well, everyone, check out Young Woman and the Sea. Your life will be better for it. Comes out May 31st. Catch it everywhere, and we will catch you next time.